And Mike Florio is with us right now from Pro Football Talk to discuss what's going on with Terry McLaurin and hop around the NFL. Mike, thanks for a few minutes. We know you're busy. We appreciate it. How are you?
I'm doing great, guys. How are you?
Doing
very well,
well.
We're all kind of in shock about how far apart the team and McLaurin are, because he has been the anti-diva, like Mr. Good Guy here for years, and he's doing a decent job playing the part of the businessman now. The hold-in continues. He requests a trade. What's your take from afar on what's happening here between the team and the player?
Well, you know, the threshold question is the easiest one to answer. Does he deserve a new contract? Absolutely, yes. The problem is when he's at 15.5, when the market has stretched past $40 million per year in new money average, how do you properly affix a value that will make both him and the team happy? And they're clearly very far apart. I've seen different numbers out there. I think Stephen A. Smith was saying that he wants, or wait, they offered 27. I've seen he wants 35. Look, if it's anything like that, yeah, that's why they don't have a deal. The gap is too big. And then the structure is always part of this too. How much is fully guaranteed at signing? Is it 1 year? Is it 2 years? What kind of flexibility does the team have to get out of it if, once he gets past the age of 30 and his birthday is coming up in September, he begins to see a erosion of his skills? So these are all things when you get to the third contract that become very challenging. And this is where we are with a receiver who's going to be 30. Look around the league. How many receivers keep performing at a very high level beyond their 30th birthday? That's the challenge. And you know, the thing that's in McLaurin's favor, you got two more years of Jaden Daniels under a slotted rookie deal as the second pick in the draft. That is peanuts in comparison to what he's eventually going to make, but they can't pay him anything until the 2026 regular season ends. The next 2 years are the time for the other players to get paid, and I think that's one of the reasons why he's making this move. So that's it in a nutshell. And, you know, he held out, lost $200,000, never should have held out because you can't get that money back. The fines are non-waivable when you're on your second contract. And now he just hopes that they will, before week one, give him an offer that he'll deem worthy of acceptance, unless they do indeed decide to trade him. But I remember Myles Garrett back in Super Bowl week put out the statement and made the rounds at the media center saying how he wanted out of Cleveland. And there's nothing like money to make a guy decide he wants to stick around.
Well, I was saying earlier, T. Higgins, Debo.
Ayuk last year.
Ayuk, yeah. I mean, there's a lot of guys who have asked for a trade. It didn't get him anywhere, and most of them are on new deals now.
Well, that's right. That's absolutely right. And sometimes you have to do that in order to shake things up to get what you want. And this is one of the reasons why there are plenty of agents who think you should never hold out, that you can be more of a distraction in the building than you are out of the building, especially when you're talking about daily fines that can't be waived, and then the possibility that the team is going to stay dug in, they're not going to be motivated to cave, and then you start losing game checks, not just at the value of what you're due to make this year, but as a practical matter, at the value of what the team is willing to pay if you would go ahead and do a deal and show up. So it was smart for him to show up. He shouldn't have held out, and now he's creating a distraction. And apparently, Michael Parsons liked the sound of it because the next day he does the same damn thing.
Mike Florio with us here on Grant and Danny. So, Mike, help me out with something. I from the team's, or maybe from Terry's perspective, regardless of where you look at it, isn't this a CBA problem? And you kind of touched on this, but there's only so much you can do. There's only so many levers you can pull, only so much anger you can express or demands that you can make. He's under contract for 25 this year, and if they feel like it, 28, or give or take, however much the franchise tag is next year for wide receivers, the team's got him. He's got to play football for this football team here in this city at some point to get what he wants. That's kind of the ultimate hammer to me from the team side. Tell me where I'm off here.
No, you're right. And remember, the cap number is 25, but the cash is only 15.5.
Right. Yeah.
All the player cares about at this point is the cash.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the cap number helps him with the franchise tag next year because that's the basis for a 20% raise. So that'll get him to 30 under the tag next year. But this is about getting paid now, and 15.5 is well below what players are getting. But yeah, when they beef up the fines in the CBA, when they make the fines non-waivable, because the old play used to be guy holds out, racks up fines, guy comes back, and most teams will say, forget about the fine. They can only do that now if a guy is holding out under his rookie contract, period. So that makes it harder for players to hold out. And they've made it harder for rookies to hold out because you used to have a small window where you could hold out and not lose a year of credit toward free agency. Now, if you hold out one day, you lose the year of credit toward free agency. So they have systematically made it harder for players to legitimately violate their contracts. And anytime anyone says player needs to honor his contract, my response is there are two contracts. There's the individual contract between player and team. There's the broader contract between all players and all teams, and that's the CBA. And you're right. By adjusting the CBA to make it harder to violate the individual contract, it makes less sense to do it.
So, Mike, what are the chances of a few different outcomes here? It feels like them trading him is pretty remote, right? The him showing up and playing feels inevitable, maybe not imminent, but it's got to happen. And then the idea that maybe, is there a path to, like, Hendrickson is doing the hold-in, but he's not feigning an injury. Terry's on PUP with some mystery ankle or whatever. What's to prevent him and the agent from going PUP to IR and actually accruing time? I don't know that it's realistic, but I guess that's still a club they've got in the bag. Like, how do you think this thing ends?
Yeah, and I don't know if Hendrickson isn't saying he's injured, because I think the Bengals will not play ball with a deliberate and conscious hold-in. They were fining Ja'Marr Chase last year when he wasn't practicing. It wasn't a big deal. It almost blew up. But I heard as I was tracking that story that they were fining him, and they may have waived him because they can for his deal. So that's part of this too. They could be fining Hendrickson if he doesn't practice unless he says I'm injured. And that's something I wrote the other day. You know, this idea that players who are disgruntled should fake injuries, it was what former NFLPA president J.C. Treader said a couple of years ago. It sparked a grievance. The NFL won it earlier this year in a slam dunk. You shouldn't do that. The union can't induce players to essentially violate the CBA. But the point that someone made with me, and this makes a lot of sense, when you get guys who have been playing football 20 years, there's always something that you could point to and say, this thing keeps me from practicing. And there's always something you're playing through. There's always something you're dealing with. Bone spurs, hip flexor, whatever it may be, there's always something. So it makes more sense for a guy like Terry McLaurin, Micah Parsons, Trey Hendrickson to say, hey, I've got this chronic thing and I can't practice. Where it gets interesting is when week one rolls around. Will you set aside your desire to play football for this effort to get more? You still get paid, but you're not playing. And I guess, you know, it's six of one, half a dozen the other on getting paid, but you're not playing and guys want to play. And I think that's where it becomes the biggest challenge for the guys who are in camp and who want to get paid and who haven't gotten paid yet.
What would the recourse be for a team then? Talking about the nuclear scenario here, Mike, where McLaurin says, yep, my ankle still bothering me. And we just kind of go through months of this, even if the team suspects that there's nothing wrong, which this is my opinion. I'm not a medical doctor. I don't think there's anything wrong. I think he didn't have a contract that he likes. But how long can that go on, and what's the team's recourse then if they're basically suspicious of him not being completely forthright when it comes to his own injury?
Well, they better paper the hell out of the record. They got to rely on their lawyers, and they get into an HR problem, you know, similar to what the Raiders went through and will go through with Christian Wilkins. Mm-hmm. Different but similar. You got to be able to prove that this guy's full of crap. You got to be able to develop evidence that this isn't real. And if you get into a battle of doctors, good luck winning that, because the player's entitled to rely upon and has a right to a second opinion, has a right to rely on it. And so it becomes an ugly, messy path to try to say we're not going to pay him, or we're going to suspend him for conduct detrimental to the team, or whatever the case may be. But that's the risk. When you're in the building and you're creating a distraction, pushing it to the TO limit from 20 years ago, and I can't believe it's been 20 years, but it was 20 years ago this year, where he decided, I'm going to show up and I'm going to be a massive pain in the ass until they trade me or cut me. If you push it too far, they're going to suspend you up to 4 games at a time without pay.
At Pro Football Talk, Mike Florio. Pivoting to a guy you mentioned in an answer earlier, Micah Parsons. This one feels a little different, or as Jerry calls him, Michael Parson. No wonder he's negotiating with the wrong guy, Mike. In Terry's case, the team is saying you're 30. Guys fall off at that age. We can't pay you top five money. McLaurin's saying, yeah, but I'm going into year 7, 8, 9. That's what matters more. I understand the impasse. The Cowboys thing just feels more like Dallas-Dallasing a little bit. Like, what is going on there?
Well, and it's Dallas pushing things to a point with the wrong guy. And the Cowboys love to drag their feet. They love to negotiate directly with players. And I explained this last night on the Hall of Fame pregame show, and it's all come to fruition today. The Cowboys had a conversation with Micah Parsons in March that he thought was about leadership. And then at the end, the Cowboys thought they had a deal for Micah's next contract. And Micah said, no, you got to talk to my agent. And they have refused to engage his agent ever since in conversations about the contract. Now, the CBA makes it clear that if there is an agreement, it needs to be reduced to writing as soon as practical. And it hasn't been. It's been months. And under the CBA, you know, the union is the exclusive representative of all players. They certify individual agents to be the exclusive representative of each player that hires them. Micah Parsons is hired. David Mulugeta of Athletes First. That's who the Cowboys are required under labor law to deal with. And I don't know how they keep getting away with it. They used to do it with Dak Prescott. They used to do it with Ezekiel Elliott. They love to negotiate directly with the player because they know the player is more likely to cave than the agent. They don't want to deal with the agent because the agent makes it harder to get the deal done. Nobody wants to deal with agents because agents make it harder to get deals done on the terms the team wants. Well, now it's blown up in their faces. And the next move is going to be very interesting because the Cowboys try to say, oh, wait, oh, no, no, no. Oh, Micah, let's work this out. And Micah says, no, it's too late. You had your chance. You pissed me off, and I don't want to play for you anymore. I'm not going to play for you. That's what it comes down to. Will he take this back if it works? And if it doesn't work, what's going to happen? Is this back tightness that has kept him from practicing for 2 weeks of training camp going to keep him from playing this year? Or is he going to get the contract he wants and finally show up for the Cowboys? And they may say, we have no intention to trade him, but you know what's going to happen? Teams that are interested are going to start calling, and they're going to offer a couple of first-round picks plus for Micah Parsons, and they'll pay Micah what he wants. And who knows? Maybe the Cowboys decide this is the one we're not going to pay. This is the one we're going to move on from, and we're going to rebuild the team with the extra draft capital. I think it would be ludicrous for them to do it, but I think it's ludicrous for them to let it get to this point.
What's a realistic timetable? Back to, I guess we include Parsons in this too, for McLaurin, Parsons to have some kind of resolution here, Mike, whether it's back under contract or an actual trade consummated.
Well, football's a deadline-driven business. Week one makes the most sense. Week one. So you want your guys to be ready to go for the start of the season, but that's the problem. When you're talking about these high-stakes negotiations, nobody likes to move to their bottom line early, because if you move to your bottom line early, you're going to get squeezed off of it when the clock is actually striking 12. And that's why it's important to have good relationships with agents, people that you deal with on a regular basis, where you can say, hey, let's set a fake deadline that we're going to honor, like, you know, the end of the offseason program or the start of the offseason program or the start of training camp. But let's do something that ensures that the player will be ready to go when the games start. That's the problem that we've seen with the Cowboys. They wait until, you know, right at the start of the season. Last year with Dak Prescott, right at the start of the season. Now, he practiced, but still it was hovering over the team. CeeDee Lamb holds out, signs a deal right before the start of the season. So I think that makes the most sense practically, although I think it would be a lot smarter for both sides to get the deals done, get the situation resolved as soon as possible. And it's just unfortunate. It's unfortunate, especially for the Commanders, because it's not like they have a clear alternative to Terry McLaurin. They need his leadership. They need his experience. And it just takes some of that glow away from a team that feels like it's ready to take the next step. And it's up to the team. You know, it's the player taking full advantage of the leverage that is inherent to where the team is and where the player is.
Mike Florio of Pro Football Talk. We'll let you out on this one, Mike. This Christian Wilkins situation and the idea that he might have been cut over supposedly playfully kissing his teammate. I think you came out and said that just doesn't make sense, which is kind of what most of us were thinking. I know there's some backstory floating around that isn't ready for public yet, but where are we going with this story? This was wild.
Well, there's two things to remember here with Christian Wilkins, and there are two different ways that the Raiders possibly will be able to wipe out $35.2 million in guarantees on top of $49.7 million they've already paid him in cash through a year and a half of his four-year, $110 million contract. If they can prove that there was some sort of default that happened through his failure to properly repair and rehab his foot injury, that gives them license to cut off the guarantees. They tried to do that back in early June. They made that clear that they were voiding guarantees, and Wilkins filed a grievance to fight that. This other issue, and it's similar to the device that the Ravens used to cut off Earl Thomas's guaranteed money 5 years ago, where, because guaranteed money, fully guaranteed money, isn't fully and completely guaranteed. It's guaranteed for skill, injury, and salary cap. So you can cut a guy for a different reason and not owe him his guaranteed money. And the Ravens cut Earl Thomas for personal conduct detrimental to the interests of the team. Now, if the Raiders are going to try that with Wilkins as it relates to whatever happened with a teammate, whatever it was, the key piece of paper is the form that the Raiders filled out when they terminated him, because there's a box that you check. And if they check that box, personal conduct adverse to the interests of the team, that tells us they're going to try to use that as a fallback to avoid the guarantee. So it's going to be a mess. It's going to be a matter of grievance and arbitration. And because it all happened secretly and quietly, who knows if we ever find out what happened. But $35.2 million is riding on it. That relationship's over. And then separately, is Christian Wilkins able to play? I'm starting to hear that maybe his representation is realizing he may need the surgery that he'd been resisting.
Mike, awesome with us as always, man. Have an awesome weekend.
Thanks, guys.
Mike Florio, Pro Football Talk on Grant and Danny.
He's so quick.
Here on the Fan.
He's so quick on the hang-up.
The fastest hang-up maybe in show history.